Welcome to the podcast. Oh, I can't say, hey, you fuckers. That's how Joe Rogan starts his podcast. Allison Mossart, all right. So welcome to Death by a Thousand Cuts. We're doing a dedications to Allison Mossart from the Kills. Happy birthday. And who else? Joe Walsh? No. Who else you got there? Joe Walsh's birthday today?
Gabriel Landeskog?
No, Dave. He's a hockey player. What about, who was the third?
Bruce Hart.
Oh, I lied. Joe Walsh was on Saturday.
Oh, it isn't Joe Walsh. So, a happy unbirthday to Joe Walsh. Bruce Hart, I'll pass on that. But yeah, welcome to the podcast. We are music-loving, hockey-loving lunatics hanging out around a microphone. My name is Rob, hanging out with, again, the one and only David Conway, Markham, Ontario.
Good morning.
Our other buddy Wayno's hanging out with us today. That's pretty exciting. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, guys. Hi, thanks. Wayne. Thanks for having me.
Wayno. And back in the fold, Neva Chow, our trusty producer, Neva Chow, back in the mix, having been away the last little while. So welcome back, Neva. What do you guys want to get rolling with? Lots of stuff going on. We did a little hangout before we got rolling here and made a list of some stuff that we wanted to touch on. But what do you guys want to kick it off with? You want to start it with the San Jose Sharks? That was something I wanted to talk about. Melker Carlson, one of the hardest names for me to say.
Oh, the milkman.
The milkman. Milky and the Joes.
Milky and the Joes.
Who's talking about Milky and the Joes?
I mean, the latte line.
The latte line crushing it right now. And the San Jose Sharks winning a lot of hockey games, taking over the lead in the Pacific Division. I think they've won six in a row or something. So hats off to the milkman getting in there. Neva's pissed. She fucking dropped him like a bad habit. Like, how long ago, Neve?
I don't know. What day did you pick him up?
I don't know. A couple minutes right after you dropped him, I guess. 3 goals in 7 games for the milkman, plus 7. He's getting looks with the two Joes, as we said. So as long as that sticks, that's a good time. Brent Burns, though, what a beast, man. Let's talk about Brent Burns. 11 points in 11 games, 7 goals, 53 shots on goal. There's only one other player since the 1st of November that has more shots on goal than Brent Burns, and that's Alexander Ovechkin, who's got 55 and 9.
That's incredible.
That is kind of ridiculous. Brent Burns, of course, the two-position wonder.
He really is the gift that keeps on giving. With a double position, decent contract, and he just plays consistent.
Exactly. Fantasy hockey is... If you haven't listened to the podcast, we're not necessarily the biggest sports fans in the world. We're huge music fans, and we're friends. We hang out. We like to talk about our fantasy hockey teams. And it's generally our feeling that if it wasn't for fantasy hockey, we wouldn't really pay attention to the league the way we do.
Absolutely.
It's a core, fundamental part of the appeal for us. If it was just the NHL season without my fantasy team, I just don't know that I would really even care.
I don't know if I'd stay up to watch Calgary and...
of course I'd root for my home team, yeah. But yeah. I'm not really giving a shit about Tuesday night in Carolina with them and fucking Edmonton. Well, maybe I would Edmonton now because it's a good story. But generally speaking, Tuesday night in Carolina, who... I mean, you're going to have something else to do with your life, right?
Yeah, you'd hope so, but not always.
But when you have a fantasy league, you know... It gives you a reason to look at whether or not Justin Falk managed to bury a couple of power play goals or whatever.
Yeah.
And so that's where we're coming from here on the podcast. We're big fans of the fantasy hockey world, and we're enthusiasts. And when we have the time to hang out, we do talk about it. And our first love, of course, Neva and I, we play in a band. That's what we do. And it kind of affords us the time to really think about our fantasy hockey teams, maybe more than other people get the opportunity to do. And I know Wayno is hardcore. Wayne, you manage your team. Like, you're on that shit every day, right? Like, you're not sleeping.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
no,
you're
no.
never sleeping.
Multiple times.
Okay.
Multiple times.
So, yeah, Dave, are you on your team every day? Are you ever asleep at the wheel?
I've been known to be asleep at the wheel, but not so much anymore.
Can we get Stephen Collins on the phone?
Speaking of sleep at the wheel.
Okay, so there's a guy in our league that we found out last night, was $6 million over the cap. We're in an $84 million cap league. We found out a guy that's challenging for the lead, actually, the Mighty Gales, who we've since renamed the Mighty Fails. We're at $90 million, so busted Steve Collins. I don't really know how that's relevant to anyone outside of our circle, but he was $6 million over the cap. And that is just, that is some gutsy negligence right there. That is a blatant, wanton disregard for the cap system.
Blaze of great words.
Shame on you, Steve Collins. All right, look, let's get to something that might actually help someone outside of this room. The San Jose Sharks, that's where I wanted to go, right? We did that. We talked about the Milkman. We talked about Melky and the Joes. We talked about Brent Burns. Brent Burns, interesting, though. Minus 13 over his last 100-plus games played. 103 games played, actually. He's been a minus player. But this year, he's looking at his best career per-game numbers of his career, and for a rate-based perspective like that on this podcast, we talk about this thing called HFI that I've been using for a long time to help me win or challenge in our league. And it's a tool, it's a single number that we can refer to create peer groups, if you will, out of the NHL population. And Brent Burns this year is putting up a number at 1.9 HFI that puts him in a peer group with guys like Blake Wheeler, Mike Camilleri, Brendan Gallagher, Kyle Turris, Ryan Suter. And he's got 34 more shots on goal than Steven Stamkos does this year.
Unbelievable.
He's got 94 shots on goal in 21 games. Only Alexander Ovechkin has more shots on goal than Brent Burns with 96. And the next best defenseman, quote-unquote, because he does qualify as a D in a fantasy league, are Falk and Byfuglien, and they're both at 71, like a mile behind Brent Burns. So we like to look at shots on goal as some indication of how much a guy's holding onto the puck and how much he's getting shots away and generating or participating in the scoring chances that lead to goals. And Brent Burns with 7 goals in his last 11 and a point per game play with 2 positions. He is one of the best stories of the year.
Love him.
Brent Burns. Where else we got to go? Louis Erickson? What the fuck? Louis Erickson.
Lay it down, just like you did.
All right, here we go. Louis Erickson, as most people know, I guess, he of the two positions, is killing it right now. He's got 7 goals in his last 9 games played. On 18 shots, though, I'll point out, in Ovechkin's last 9 games played, he's got 55 shots on goal. Louis's got 18, but Louis somehow managed to bury 7 of them. In the month of November, he's got a 2.4 HFI, which is elite. Usually only 25 to 30 players in the NHL will get over 2.0 in any season. So to be rocking a 2.4 through the month of November is pretty good. That's on par with like Zuccarello, who's killing it for New York, with Pavelski, your boy, Waino, that's killing it for San Jose. That's on par with Stamkos, who's seen an uptick, thankfully, in November. Ovechkin with Bergeron. So that 2.4 for Louis Erickson in November is ridiculous. I mean, it's awesome. And it's driving the 2.1 that is his career best this year. But then Waino and I started digging into the pattern of his career, if you will. And I'd hate to say it's predictable, but it is curious. I mean, he starts out with a very, you know, low HFI, as many players do, comes in with a 0.6 and slowly works up to this 1.7 territory that makes him a bona fide option for a winning roster. If you have a forward on your team, he should be a 1.7 or more. That's sort of the philosophy attached to the HFI thing. So his career best was this 1.9, right at the apex of his statistical run, if you will. And it seems that he's had a tough time matching that apex ever since. In fact, he's been like a 1.2 or a 1.3 ever since, until suddenly this season where he's rocking this 2.1. I mean, he's only been that 1.7 or more player 4 times in 10 seasons. So is he, generally speaking, a bona fide option? Never really has been, in my view. He seems to need to benefit from the situation and the pairing And it also seems to align with, coincidentally, as Waino helped point out, with his contract situation.
Well, surprise, surprise.
So that's kind of a bummer. And where does that leave people that own Louis Erickson right now? And where does it leave the Boston Bruins? Well, it would... Some people say the best indicator of future performance is past performance. And if that's the case, then if you're the Boston Bruins, you think this is a guy you got to move, because do you want to re-up this player, knowing that the pattern in his career has been that when his contract is up, he puts up ridiculous numbers, but everything in between is pretty average. You're going to be wanting to be that team that hands Louis Erickson the money. If I'm the Boston Bruins, I'm saying, fuck that. I'm out of the Louis Erickson file. Give me that Cam Fowler deal right away. Let's go. So it's kind of a bummer, the Louis Erickson file. While it's a good story, obviously he's killing it at elite levels right now, the big picture is kind of a drag. It just reinforces my impression of his file, which is I'm really not down with it.
But to us in the pool, you've always been kind of touting that whole... Anybody on their contract year always overperforms. And you know what? And a few of us in the pool have always looked at that too, going, hey, listen, here's a guy fairly on the cheap, needs to make that contract year. This is the year you want to have him. Mm. And you know what? That's a year to capitalize on Louis Erickson.
Totally. The fruits are there. Ride it while you can.
And if you're that guy that looked at the contract situation and of course, knows all this stuff going into the season, well, you know that this is the year to have Louis Erickson. You would think you'd be sitting there in the summer going, all right, well, Louis's up for a new deal. You've got a lot of flux going on in Boston. You know Louis's probably saying to his wife, I should probably maybe work out a few extra times this summer just to make sure that, you know, I don't get shipped out with the rest of them or whatever, just knowing that he needs it. Well, how old is he now? How old is Louis Erickson? He's got to be...
He is. Oh, he's on my roster. Let me check.
He's got to be looking at this as, obviously, a serious time in his life. He needs to have...
30.
He's 30 years old, so he's looking at...
This is it.
He needs to cash in. So it's great that he's producing, but, man, I wouldn't be giving him that dough. And I'd be expecting a drop into production after his best behavior year in his new environment.
I bet he'll be looking for, like, 4 years, $5 million.
Well, you'd think, right? Any guy that's good for 20 goals in the NHL nowadays is going to get $4 million.
So yeah, if he over
for sure,
yeah.
So if he's in a situation where a player like him is in demand, oh man, he's going to get that $4 or $5 million for sure. Somebody's going to give it to him, probably Anaheim.
Speaking of Anaheim.
All right, well, let's go there. Let's go to Anaheim. Waino, you wanted to talk about Anaheim.
What's up? What is up? It's a week ago we spoke outside of the podcast about this. And I asked, like, when does it turn around? Because it just has to, is my original thought. But then as the weeks turn, and then you add up the minus that the team is.
Yeah, it's kind of bleak.
You just wonder if they can dig out of it. And if they can, it'll be in a time when you'll be picking them up on the waiver wire, not holding on to them, hoping for it to turn around.
Well, they just can't fucking score. 38 goals in 21 games for the team. And as you pointed out, a minus 7 as a team. They got 7 wins in 21 hockey games. That's not good, winning a 30-year games. They have the second-best PK in the West, but the only teams with a worse power play... there's only a handful of teams, excuse me, with a worse power play. Their power play is going at 15%. I mean, that's nowhere compared to, say, a team like Dallas, who's nearly twice as good at that, at 28% on the power play. And they have a shitty PK, actually, if you look at it. Dallas's PK is only 80%. They're killing it in the NHL right now. On the strength of the domination coming from their forward group, the improved play of the back end, the increased depth in net, and this ridiculous 28% power play that clearly the Anaheim Ducks just do not have going on. So
The worm's got to turn.
Something's got to give. Bob Murray, like...
But is it a fire... In fantasy options, is it a fire sale that we were talking about earlier? Is it time to, like, hey, I'm going to cut bait and trade a Corey Perry for someone a little of less value that at least is producing right now?
How the hell are you going to trade Corey Perry right now?
Well, that's the thing. So do you have to sit... Especially in our league, it's a cap league, so it's really tough.
Who the fuck is going to take Corey Perry right now?
There's always someone that looks at
someone career. Might be looking
hey,
at
I was talking to somebody
in
another pool.
In a heartbeat.
You would?
Not in our cap situation, but in a non-cap league?
Yes,
I would.
In a non-cap
absolutely.
League. But in our
right,
league...
Right, because in a non-cap league, there's no better time than to go out and pluck Corey Perry.
Right.
Corey. And as I said to you before we started recording this thing, was my feeling this year was that the Ducks were going to have sort of a shitty regular season that... They've already proven they can dominate the regular season, but you'd have to think the veterans on that team are eyeing the playoffs and prioritizing the playoffs. And wouldn't it only make sense that they would be less than 110% wire to wire during the regular season, that it would be less important to them to win as opposed to having some legs left for these guys that aren't getting any younger? Kessler, Getzlaff, Perry.
They're all signed forever.
Yes, that's when all of a sudden our conversation really turned into about depth.
24 players are minus on their team.
Yeah, that's pretty
good. That's terrible.
I was really surprised it was only minus seven as a team.
But, well, you talked about the depth, David, or you mentioned the depth, David. Talk about the depth. Like, Chris Stewart, Carl Hagelin, how are those situations going for them? I mean, when you're calling up Nick Ritchie and putting him in a top six role, obviously it's not going so well. And if you're throwing out Chris Stewart on your second power play unit, well, no wonder maybe you're having a 15% success rate. Maybe your second power play unit shouldn't have fucking Chris Stewart on it. And maybe they should get Boston Bruins on the phone and plug in Louis Erickson for the rest of the year as a rental and then not re-sign him.
Yeah, well.
Let somebody else pay Louis for the next...
Yeah, Louis, outside of fantasy, like, I don't know what you would do with him. Someone's going to pay him, but...
Well, I guess he could be a rental. Let's get on to the Can't Finish Gang. Holy shit. If you have a team consisting of the following players, like, if this is your core, I feel terrible for you. And this must be a shitty fucking hockey season for you. Here we go. If your core consists of Voracek, Letang, Stamkos, Bishop, Hudler, Verbata, Kadri, did I say Hedman?
Nope.
And Hedman. If that's a large part of your team, man, you are so fucked right now. Let's go over it. Nazem Kadri, as Wayno said earlier, we probably wouldn't even be talking about this player if it wasn't for one weird thing, and that is only four players in the NHL have been credited with more shots on goal than Nazem Kadri. I mean, he's been credited, I'll say that, because who knows who the hell's tracking the shots on goal for Nazem Kadri in Leafs?
Joe Bowen.
I think it's Brendan Shanahan who's in control of the shot count for Nazem Kadri at Leaf games. He's got more shots on goal than Pacioretty, than Sagan, who both have 11 goals. Yet he's only got two goals on 84 shots on goal. At this pace, he's going to have a 3% shooting percentage. By the end of the year, he's got one goal on the power play. So he has one even strength goal. The Toronto Maple Leafs' number one center, who is fifth in the NHL in shots on goal with 84, has one even strength goal and 8 points in 21 games.
Fantastic. That's more of a bombing, really, isn't
that
it?
That is some strange shit. Drop the hammer on Nazem Kadri. Yeah, that is bomb-worthy. And you know who else we may as well drop a bomb on while we're here, since we mentioned him too? Jakub Voracek. I mean, what is going on?
J-Vo.
It just won't end. Drop the hammer on Voracek. 9 points in 20 games, and he has one goal on 67 shots on goal now. He doesn't even have one on the power play. I mean, it is so ugly. We may as well continue. Let's bomb the entire can't finish gang. Radim Vrbata, drop the hammer on Radim Vrbata. 4 goals on 79 shots. Dustin Brown,
how good of
a situation do you need to be put in to do something? 2 goals on 63. Drop the hammer on Dustin Brown. And Yuri Hudler. What are we to make of Yuri Hudler?
Well, you guys made a half-hour conversation out of him.
Well, this is a personal one for Waino, because Waino has him in our league. In 9 seasons in the NHL, through that HFI filter, a per-game measure of the entire stats pack that generally gets used in fantasy hockey leagues. Changing all the time. I know, fluid. Not perfect. I understand. But it's been a constant measure for us for almost 20 years. It's given us a historical perspective and a current one that, regardless of his flaws, has been consistent. So there is some value in it for us, and it has proven to help people. So let's use that filter on the Yuri Hudler file. 9 seasons, his career average is 1.0. Now, we're looking for 1.7 to even get on your roster. The team with the most 1.7s is generally going to win. He has been a 1.7 once in his career. When was that?
Must have been last year.
And last fucking year.
He dresses real pretty. This is what I mean.
Oh, Yuri.
He's 3 position. He's the average 4 million.
Right,
he's
on paper.
The end of his contract.
Right. On paper going into this season, he looked great is what you're saying.
Yeah, and you don't want to let go, and then all of a sudden it's too late.
Right, because everyone attached the trajectory to Calgary like they were a team that was going to keep improving, despite the fact they weren't starting the season with Brody, despite the fact they're bringing in Hamilton, despite Giordano getting re-ups.
Brody, Hamilton.
And I guess Monahan hasn't been gangbusters out of the gate. And I don't know what the situation with Hudler is on a personal level, but he is a UFA, and generally you would think a UFA in his position would be having a career year, not what he's putting up, which is he's got that 1.0 going on this year. That is his career average. So it makes you wonder, is he the 1.0? Is he just doing now what he generally does? Or really, is his production tied to the opportunities that he's been given, as you sort of mentioned earlier?
Well, yeah, today, with that power play that he wouldn't have gotten. But you lay it out when you talk about it and look at the numbers, I wonder, why is he still on my team? Because there's the truth.
Yeah.
But
you know what's troubling? In the 2 years that he was really successful, he shot the puck. He had at least 150 shots on goal last year when he buried 31, and that year that he buried 23, the same deal. This year he's got less than 2 shots on goal per game. I mean, he is shooting considerably less this year than he was last year. I don't know if that's because he's hurt, or really what that can be attributed to. If you're Calgary, Waino, you have him.
Yeah.
So if you're Calgary, is Yuri Hudler the guy that you're going to re-up now? He's a UFA. Are you going to re-up him and keep him in Calgary? Is there a good relationship there? He's a guy that you just want to keep around and prioritize? Or do you look at the whole package and wonder at this point, at this age, if this is maybe a player you move on from?
Absolutely. At the end of the year, you're not extending him a contract, but I guess it's just a matter of how their year goes. If it continues south and they're nowhere near the playoffs, maybe he's someone they can sell high on if he goes on a streak and get a little something for him. But I don't see how they'll re-up him and bring him back as a part of a core that's, you know, young.
Well, Calgary isn't exactly tearing it up. They had a nice little turnaround that it seemed to be things stopped being abysmal when Brody got back into the mix.
And yeah.
Goudreau's been pretty rock solid, and there's been some life from Backlund, and Bennett's been a beauty. Bennett's been a real, a true beauty lately. So there are some real bright spots with Calgary, but the bottom line if we're going to knock on Anaheim for being anemic, I mean, how do we not attach the same thing to Calgary at this point? They've got 21 games played and 50 goals. Well, they've given up 75 fucking goals. So clearly the goaltending has been the root of that problem all season long. The goaltending has been a joke. It's been a carousel of bad.
But you hold Anaheim to expectations because they have that history in the past, whereas Calgary's just starting to build on that kind of thing.
Plus Calgary
superstars.
Calgary is...
Yes.
In all those areas, like goaltending and special teams, they're terrible. Their PK is 74%. That is the worst in their division. It's the worst in the conference. It's the second, third worst number in the whole league. Their PK is 14.3%. That is the second worst in their division. That is the second worst in their conference. And that's like, what, third or fourth worst in the entire league. So the special teams suck. The goaltending sucks. The blue line, which had so much hype attached to it going into the season, obviously isn't enough to compensate for that.
Fantasy-wise, are we in a fire sale then?
I wouldn't be trading a Monahan. Not a chance in hell. Bennett, Monahan, Goudreau, those players are awesome. The guy that would be troubling me is Giordano.
Yeah.
Paid him the big bucks. He was an elite producer. I mean, there was...
He was crazy last year.
We're cynical as hell. Like, have no mistake, folks. Like, don't be mistaken in any way about it. We are cynical when it comes to these files because when a guy's looking to get paid, of course you're gonna be your best. And once you do get that monster deal, is it human nature to maybe relax just a little bit? Make sure you don't, you know, you got something to protect now. Sure, I'm not gonna knock him for that, but man, no one likes to see a drop off like this after a guy gets paid.
Yeah, it's tough to watch, but as far as this year, he's still on the last year of the reasonable whatever 4.05 million.
Yeah, but he's certainly not in the same situation he was in 2 years ago.
No, you're right, and I don't know. I wonder if they mixed up with things that really didn't need to, because just keep Brody with him, and I guess Brody getting hurt at the beginning of the year didn't help. But
well, Dougie Hamilton's getting 5+ for the next 4 years from the Calgary Flames.
Unbelievable.
TJ Brody's getting 4+ for the next 4 years from the Calgary Flames. Mark Giordano's getting 6+ for the next 4 years from the Calgary Flames. So that's the core of the Calgary blue line. And that's what they're looking at. Looking at the situation right now. You have a lot of guys. Hudler, Jones, Goudreau, Monahan, Colburn, Russell, Hiller, Ramo, Ordio are all playing for new contracts.
Yeah.
The whole team should be on an upswing, but I don't think it is.
Didn't quite realize that. So you would expect better things from the Calgary Flames, wouldn't you?
Well, you would, I guess, hope.
They'll be an after Christmas team.
The after Christmas team. You heard it here first, folks.
After Christmas team. There you go.
After Christmas team.
So don't pick up anybody on that team.
Right. These guys are all still on the golf course a little bit. That's what you're saying. They're still.
And then straight into American Thanksgiving.
Getting the Thanksgiving. All right, come on, guys. Let's go. We're all playing for contracts.
And then it's Christmas.
We got to get into the All right, Christmas time means now we got to do the playoff push.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying. Tampa Bay Lightning. I know somebody wanted to talk a little bit of Tampa Bay Lightning. Bishop. Not a great season so far. Stamkos, as we hinted at earlier, not a great season. This is his first sub-2.0 HFI year in 6 years. In fact, his first since his rookie season. He's at a 1.8 this year, which makes him a bona fide option for your fantasy team, Waino. But it does not make him the third best player that some people thought he would be going into the season.
Neither really is many of the ones that were in the top.
If you had Bishop, Stamkos, and Hedman as your core, like I did in our league to start this year, you'd be very nervous. I ended up dumping Bishop in our league just because I had Schneider and the Minnesota goalie whose name eludes me at the moment.
Dubnyk.
Dubnyk.
Strange that I couldn't remember Dubnyk's name at the moment.
So strange.
What a world.
Pittsburgh.
But if you had Bishop, Stamkos, and Hedman as your key components, you're swimming right now. This Hedman's at a 1.2 this year. That's not even in the 1.4 territory that you need from a defenseman to be on your roster in the first place. He was a 1.5 last year. He was a 1.6 the year before that. But Hedman, a bona fide option. Talk about Norris Trophy wins.
Yeah.
For Hedman. Talk of Art Ross trophies for Stamkos. Vezina trophies for Bishop.
They really lost momentum.
Now, I read today that some people, or a couple of places where people suggested there was an uptick there, and that this could be the time that Tampa gets back into contention, starts playing. I mean, they've got 10 wins in 22 games played. That is not what people expected from the Tampa Bay Lightning. They got 5 key components that are going to be either UFA or RFA next year. Now, of great interest to us here in Toronto is Steven Stamkos. What the hell is going on with Steven Stamkos? For me, the way I see this thing is if this team is not winning hockey games and this 10 win in 22 game pace continues, Yzerman's got to move him. Like, there's no guarantee that riding with the group that you have and sticking with Stamkos to the end is going to get you that Stanley Cup and then he leaves for nothing. I think this continues another week or two, he's got to move.
I've thought since the beginning of the year that's the headline that we're all going to be watching, because either they go down and the decision has to be made, and you know, if he trades him, obviously he's trading it to somebody who's going to work out a contract, so they're going to get probably good quantity and quality coming back. But if they wait till the end of the year and they're on a roll and they keep him, you know, maybe he's worth it if you go all the way to the Stanley Cup. But that's tough to walk away from.
Who do you think's got a better power play right now, Toronto or Tampa Bay?
Toronto.
Yeah. How the fuck is that happening?
Makes no sense.
The Tampa Bay Lightning have 10 wins in 22 games. Their power play is the worst in their division. No, that's not true. The Detroit Red Wings. What a bummer for the Red Wings. They go from being one of the best power plays in the league last year to the worst power play in the Eastern or in the Atlantic Division. Bye-bye Babcock, bye-bye power play coach, both to the Leafs. And now the Detroit Red Wings, I'm sure they don't want to admit it, but there you go. Worst power play in the division, the Leafs, competing with some of the best.
Well, it goes to show.
But the reason I brought up the Toronto Maple Leafs at all, aside from the fact that Leaf fans are myopic, is that Stamkos just fucking well could be a Leaf. Like, is there a team more interested than bringing him in? I mean, he's 25. He fits the profile of what they need, the model citizen, the teacher's pet, the perfect sort of team player trained by Gary Roberts, the whole deal. I mean, at this point, at his age, isn't he the right player for the Toronto Maple Leafs to overpay for a long term? I mean, I can understand why a team like the Chicago Blackhawks wouldn't necessarily prioritize Steven Stamkos at this point, but, or maybe they would, but financially, on paper, you'd have to think that would be a real challenge for them. Ooh, Pittsburgh Penguins would probably jump in there and get, you know, add him to their roster. But
I think it makes too much sense in Toronto for it to happen.
Right, so you think he'll wind up as a rental somewhere else and then just go on to the open market?
Could you imagine him as a rental?
I think any day now, Yzerman's got to come to the realization that he's got to move this player. And I think the best trading partner is the Toronto Maple Leafs. And if I am the Maple Leafs, I'm fucking in. Let's overpay. We've got some pieces now, finally. You've got players, like we talked about earlier. You're starting to actually have some players in the minors to talk about, whether it's Garrett Sparks or...
I heard your power play look with Steve Stamkos now.
Nylander and Marner and stuff. Now, you don't want to give up on those pieces, but they do have people to... in the pipe and players on the roster currently that they could make a package out of.
What do you think it would take?
Oh,
like he wouldn't be playing with Mitch Marner because Mitch Marner would be in Tampa, right?
No, but you'd know the Leafs would be drooling over the prospect of Stamkos, Marner, and Nylander leading this next wave.
Okay, but how do you get him through a trade where it's going to be a long-term?
You have to look really long and hard. You'd have to look really long and hard at the pieces currently of any value on the team at all right now. Morgan Rielly, Nazem Kadri.
What value?
Well, I don't think Nazem Kadri has much value. Morgan Rielly does.
Morgan Rielly certainly does. Yeah. But Morgan Rielly alone, don't you think it would be a Rielly, Marner,
sure.
Maybe
you would have to
even
give
a Nylander plus a number one?
Maybe they're looking at... the Leafs are going to have an abundance of draft picks next year. Yeah. So maybe Tampa would be interested in a package that was driven by some draft picks, plus a couple of players that could play right away.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's...
Move Lupul?
We could speculate on that forever. What?
Move Lupul?
For who? Who the fuck is going to take...
throw him in that package with Kadri.
The Leafs are praying Lupul stays healthy for another week just so that they can entertain trading him. Lupul's been good, but his... The foot speed's not there. The hands are still there. He can still finish. He can still stand in front of the net and tap in the rebounds.
Perfect.
That's what he's been doing. You go back and look at his goals. It's not like he's blasting down the wing, picking up the puck on the fly, making a move on a defenseman, and burying with a sweet shot that the goalie wasn't ready for. Like, it's him. He's basically just an advocator. With all due respect.
$5 million.
To both players. We didn't drop the bomb on Chris Letang, did we?
No.
Neva wanted to drop the hammer bad on Chris Letang, and this is why. He's got a 1.0 HFI this year. That's pretty brutal. In fact, as we said earlier, you want a 1.4 or more out of defenseman to put him on your team. And Chris Letang has been that in five of the last five seasons. He has been 1.4 or more. In fact, he hit the 2.0 mark twice in those five seasons, which is on par with the best 20, 25, 30 forwards in the league generally. So Chris Letang to be rocking a 1.0 this year, easily classifiable as brutal. How brutal?
One
goal on 56 shots on goal. He belongs with the can't finish gang. In fact, he should be the assistant fucking captain of the can't finish gang or the can't shoot straight gang. We could call it the can't shoot straight gang. One goal on 56 and a minus 13, of course, which is what Neva's been complaining about because she's paying him $7 million. Yeah.
7.25. Well, not anymore.
7.25.
Did you drop him?
Dropped him.
I thought Neva was going to wait and drop him live, but she was so mad.
Drop him live
before the show started.
Yeah, she dropped him.
Couldn't wait
before the podcast began. Yeah, that sucks, Chris Letang. The eye test hasn't been great either. There's been some real stinkers there, and the numbers clearly.
The whole team.
Not what people were hoping for that invested in him. The Toronto Maple Leafs, we touched on it. David wanted to go there further, so let's go there, David. And this is being covered a lot here in the local media, so we don't want to beat the dead horse on Babcock and all that. But, as we said, the power play's working, the PK's working, the team looks night and day. And Reimer, a guy that... did we do a classic Toronto and take one of our own for granted yet again? Have we done that with James Reimer? Have we only focused on his flaws as opposed to the fact that he's an honest gamer?
Always been a gamer.
Have we discredited? Like, it's kind of a Toronto local thing, man. Like, we just do that. Because
maybe that's
everywhere, but like, you just sort of take for granted the ones that you've been kicking around for a while.
It's true.
But that culture was embedded in the team in the past couple of years that if he's in the net, there's not that confidence playing behind anybody else before.
Hey, man, whatever it is, you know that looking at this season that the team seems to want to play for him. They don't give up on him. I'm sure that really has less to do with him and more to do with Babcock and the whole new regime and players on a personal level wanting to either get out of here at the end of the season or stick with it. For whatever reason, they got to be motivated. And Reimer, too, because you got to know he knows he's not in the long-term plans as their number one goalie. Yet, right now, people like Don Cherry, as you said, are calling him the best goalie currently in the NHL because of the fact he's a gamer and he is fighting minute to minute and keeping the Leafs pretty much in every hockey game that you tune into.
And you know, Babcock is a coach that doesn't matter who you are, he will support you if you are producing what he wants. So it doesn't matter what your past was, but he keeps playing the guys that are good and the guys that are hot and keeps pumping those tires. So, and I think that's going to continue to happen.
Yeah, the Babcock hype it hasn't been hype. It's clearly a situation where the team is buying in and working more as a unit this year than we saw last year. That is a given. They have some strange things going on. As we said, Nazem Kadri is a strange thing. And you'd have to think that that's a player that they would consider moving in a deal for a better number one centerman if they had the opportunity to upgrade. I know it's been a good season for Nazem Kadri. Locally, everyone's like, all right, finally he looks like a real player. He's carrying the puck. He's looking confident. But still, is he the guy you want as your number one centerman? I don't know that I'd feel that way about him. I'd still be looking to upgrade that position. So is he a player that now that is showing some ability to be at least a top two center, do they consider moving him in a package with some draft picks, maybe one of their prospects or two of their prospects for an upgrade?
I think without a doubt they would do that. I think they're probably working to build him up to a point that they can probably move on. I think it's best for him and for give someone else a shot, you know, like Kadri has a lot of stigma. He's been around.
If he could slide into an anonymous team somewhere in the West,
he
could
do great
as a number two center.
I think he's a good
a high third
player,
low like, second.
Yeah,
interchangeable.
He could be your second power play, like
second fourth power play unit, second line
yeah,
center.
Like if he doesn't have to be the guy, he's just the extra guy that's shifty, fast, quick hands. You know,
yeah.
And I think that if they can build him up to get enough out of it, they'd be worthwhile, but they're in no hurry because they're not going to be great for a few years, and I think they're going to probably ride everyone until they're at their highest, and if they have bidders, they'll probably be selling just about anybody.
Yeah, but if you're cynical on the Kadri file, which a lot of people are, you're just going to point to the fact that he's got 8 points in 21 games and the fact that he's got the team worst minus eight.
No, there's a guy.
And you're just going to go, he can't play defense and he can't finish.
There's a guy out there crunching that number on a team somewhere that says, you know, if we put him in this situation, he will capitalize. You know, there's a team out there somewhere that thinks they're going to pick a Cherry. That's why you got to dangle him out there. They think that, oh, this will be the guy that's actually the deal's for, but you blow the smoke for another deal.
Okay, but let's keep the conversation focused on really the point of all this is that from a fantasy hockey perspective, what do you do with Nazem Kadri? You own him right now because you thought maybe this would be a good flyer pick. And you're looking at the file going, fuck, he's got the fifth most shots in the league. Like, I can't drop him. They're bound to go in soon, right, Wayne?
I've never even looked at him as an option. But that's, you know, that's my own thing. Plus, I think he's only a one.
So how many shots? So that's only worth, like, 8 points in our pool. So unless you have shots, it's a high number in your pool.
Yes, but isn't it interesting that the only players in that territory are all elite fantasy options?
What I'd say is that he definitely have the little blue star beside him. And when you see that he's turning a corner or might be, or even if he had a great game and nothing went in, but you see that he's playing like he may, you want to get ahead of the curve and maybe take him. But I wouldn't be holding him.
The only players other than Kadri to have 80 shots on goal or more at this point: Ovechkin, Burns, Hall, Daniel Sedin, Max Pacioretty, and Tyler Seguin. I'd have any of those guys on my team this year.
It's true.
And there's Nazem Kadri right in the middle of the mall, on par with Taylor Hall.
In the mall.
In the mall. Yeah, not Nazem Kadri. I wouldn't be waiting this long, to be honest with you. He wouldn't be on my roster. And as I said earlier, I don't think we'd really be talking about him unless it was for this one particular number, 84 shots on goal. That is just fucking weird. On that note, thanks for tuning in to our conversation this week about our fantasy hockey worlds. Thanks to Wayno for dropping by.
Thanks for having me.
It's a real pleasure to talk to you on a Monday morning, Wayno.
Yes, I love it.
Thanks to David for coming by. Thanks to Neva for getting us all together. And
thanks, Neva.
Neva for digging through some stuff for us. And thanks for hanging with us, y'all out there. Have a great week. And go listen to some birthday music by...
Bruce Hornsby?
Not fucking Bruce Hornsby. It's Allison Mossart's birthday. Yes. Go listen to some Kills. Right on. We'll talk to you soon. Bye. Who wants to